Hello, everybody, and welcome to Artist Corner. Today, I'm joined by a special guest, Trent Linkarski.
Hi, everyone. And
you've probably seen him online from multiple places. He's been in Joel Haber's videos, where he acts in his comedy sketches and films, and he also does a lot of his own stuff, too, on his own YouTube channel, where he does streams and painting and a lot of all-around just fun and creative stuff. Thank you for joining me today.
Yeah, of course. Thanks for having me.
What was the first project you ever worked on and shared with people?
Like ever?
Yeah, if you don't mind sharing.
Yeah, of course. The first one that I did was with Joel, and it's called Chop, Crop, and Roll. And it's from, I don't know what year it was from, probably 2013 or 14. And I have one line in it, and I go, good luck. But I my character is Milk Boy, and it's kind of making fun of the show, like Chopped. So I just bring out like a thing of milk for the contestants of the show. And it's like a sketch. So that's the first thing I was ever in, like with Joel.
Did you improvise that line?
No, I think it was given to me.
A lot of your stuff is improvised, which I find is really interesting. Does your acting process change compared to when you improvise and when you have to do a script or something?
Yeah. I feel like a lot of the stuff that I have done is improvised. So I've only really done like a handful of projects where it was like very like script dependent. One of them's not out yet, so I can't really talk about it. But I have a couple of things I could say about this. But like one thing, like acting, I've done a lot of script stuff, like voice acting, which I'm fine with. But like acting, it's very weird. And if like you don't have time to prepare, it's also very stressful, because there's something about like being in front of a whole bunch of people and like needing everything to go right and like messing up your lines, which kind of sucks. But I'm sorry, what was the question again? just like the differences.
It was actually, I forgot it. I improvised that question. Wait.
Oh, okay.
It was how does your process change when you improvise compared to when you're given a script?
Yeah. I'd say mostly that. And then for voice acting, it's a lot easier. You just kind of have to get used to like reading things out loud as you're like reading them, which is something that I was never good at. Like especially as a kid, like in class when you do like the thing where you go around and read stuff in like English class, like I was so bad at that. I would get so nervous. But it's something that I've just kind of come to get like used to. And yeah, I don't know. It's definitely different. I always find like improvising more fun, because it feels more real. Like no matter what character, what the situation is, it's more real to have like people stutter and have like ums and stuff like that. And I feel like you sometimes lose that in a script, where it's like, we need to say like this, and you have to word it like this. And it's like, I wouldn't say it like that. Like, who talks like that? Like stuff, lines like that are sometimes frustrating when you're like forced to read stuff word for word. And I don't know. I find improvising more fun. Like it's fun to go into a project with like a rough outline of like beats you have to hit. But other than that, I like to just, it's fun to go off the cuff.
It's always interesting to me too, because in a lot of your videos, especially with Joel, there's always moments where you guys break out of character a bit and it shows you guys laughing.
Yeah.
Was there anyone who maybe inspires the way that you improvise, how you act or perform? And take your time, by the way, for any of these questions.
Okay. That's a good question. There's not really like one specific like person that sticks out in my mind. I feel like it's sort of a combination of different things. Especially when it comes to comedy, I feel like I've talked about this on streams before, where it's like when I was like a teenager, I would go to bed. I used to have like on my iPod Touch, I would have Pandora Radio, and there was like a stand up comedy section. So I would just like fall asleep, like listening to like Patton Oswalt bits and like Ralphie May and George Carlin, like a lot of like big people, and just like kind of getting used to like all different styles of comedy. And I feel like I just sort of resonated a lot with like dry humor and stuff like that. And I would watch a lot of British stuff too, like Monty Python, which isn't really dry humor. There is some, but, and I watch like Fry and Laurie, a bit of Fry and Laurie, which is another British comedy show. So I feel like just a mashup of everything and then just finding certain styles or certain things that I found very funny and being like, all right, that's really funny. I like that. And kind of going with that, I guess.
You mentioned dry humor. I feel like I don't really understand different types of humor. I was wondering, did it take you a while to learn more about that? Or did that just kind of come naturally to you with what your tastes are?
I guess it kind of, I don't know. I feel like it kind of comes naturally. It's like, that's just sort of what I've always, how I've laughed, like, or how I've like made jokes, like even as like a kid and as a teenager. And then I feel like I've just kind of always fallen back on just sort of being like, yeah, like, I don't know.
I think I relate to that a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cause like, I don't know. I've never really like edgy humor. I've never, it has its place sometimes, but it's never really connected with me. And then other stuff, I'm like slapstick. Like, I'm not a very like physical person. Like, I feel like it's more fun to like say something really funny.
Yeah.
But yeah,
it's really cool to me how you're not afraid to just be goofy. I think there's a lot of times where it might be a little scary to be goofy, because there's always a risk when it comes to humor, I feel like, and you never know what the reaction is going to be from other people.
Yeah.
And that's inspiring to me, I think.
Thank you.
How much has your creative process changed since you started making videos or films?
I feel like I've definitely gotten more confident since like I first started making my own stuff. I feel like when you first start out, you really want to just like nail the idea. You want to be like, all right, I want this video, this has to happen, and this has to happen, and this person has to say this. But then you sort of later on, you're sort of like, all right, I just want this to happen. And then I'm acting with these like three people that I know, and I'm like, I just trust them to do something funny or say something funny in this moment. And I'm like, oh, I'll say something funny back. I feel like I've just sort of become comfortable with that and that sort of style. I think that's something that everyone kind of gets over time, which is you just sort of become comfortable with the style, I guess, over time.
Do you think that who you're with helps with your creativity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Does where you are also impact that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess they both do. I don't know. I feel like when you're with different people, like different like styles come through for sure. Like either acting wise or humor wise. And I think where you are can sometimes have certain limitations too. Like if you're in a house, I feel like you can kind of do whatever. But then if you're like outside at a certain place, you can kind of use the environment to your advantage and be like, sometimes the environment can be funny. Like just having something take place in a weird location can be funny too. That makes something more interesting. As I'm saying this, I'm just thinking of that one video I did with Joel where I just like, I've destroyed house, and it's like when you check, I forget what it's called, but it's like when you check on your friend. Yeah. when you check in on your friend who's not doing well or something like that, and it's like something's really funny about just me being like, yeah, no, I'm fine, I'm just like doing whatever, and like the house is demolished. But like, I feel like a lot of the jokes wouldn't have landed if we did that in a normal house or just like outside somewhere in a field. But yeah.
So from my understanding, it depends on the context of the situation.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Awesome.
Yeah.
If you could go back to when you first started uploading videos to YouTube, is there anything you would have done differently?
Ooh. I don't think so. I feel like I've learned a lot. Like the stuff I first started uploading was just like audio skits. So it was just like I'd make a cool thing with items on my desk and then just record a kind of a funny audio or a more serious audio or something and try to make it funny. And some of them are not funny. I feel like most of them don't really land and aren't very funny. But I feel like that's all part of the process. So like, and then learning certain just like tools of the trade, like how to make your audio sound good and stuff. And like, I didn't know stuff like that. So I feel like you sort of need those sort of hiccups and it's fun to look back on too. Even like some of my first like sketches, it's fun to be like, all right, I could have made that joke tighter. That's not funny. Like I could have cut that. And it's just fun to kind of reflect on. So I don't really know that I would have done anything different.
When you make something, how often do you go back to rewatch it, if at all?
Oh, I guess it depends on the video. I feel like I don't really watch my own stuff a lot. Like I'll rewatch stuff that I made with Joel a lot, and like other friends too. But I feel like I don't really watch my stuff a lot.
Do you ever
sort of like
I
was just gonna say like it's sort of like I film it and then I edit it and then I'm like, all right, that's good.
Yeah. Do you ever see yourself pop up in when you're watching YouTube on a video?
Yeah. Yeah, it's weird. It's sometimes weird, yeah. Or like scrolling through like Instagram or TikTok and it's like, oh yeah, there's me and a Churdley's short or something.
And how do you reach out to someone and collaborate with them in a way that makes it easy and fun and I guess not complicated?
Yeah, I think just reaching out usually works. And I think there's like I'll get nervous when I reach out to people sometimes where I'm I message animators a lot where I'm like, hey, if you ever need a voice, like let me know. And there's something kind of exhilarating when they're like, yeah, dude, I love your stuff, I'd love to have you in the thing. And I'm like, oh yes, yes. But then sometimes they don't answer and I'm like, okay. But yeah.
I think it's really interesting because it's when you reach out to someone, you never know if they're gonna respond back. So
yeah.
It's always just a good idea, I think, to just reach out and be okay mm-hmm. with whatever the outcome is.
Absolutely, yeah. Totally, yeah. There's been a lot of times where I'll reach out and I just don't get something back, or they'll be like, yeah, sure, let's do something, and then it's like 2 years later and we haven't done anything. But I think that's just the nature of doing creative stuff. I feel like a lot of times I feel like people have a lot on their plates and they're just like, they just get back like, yeah, let's do it. And then they're just like, they have like 900 other things to do. Yeah. I've definitely done that. And it feels bad sometimes. It feels bad most of the time, but yeah, I've definitely done that before and I do feel bad. I think I don't know if it was before we got cut off or not, but I said, I was like, we're all just people.
Yeah.
Either reaching out or getting reached out to. It's like, we're all just people. Sometimes we miss a message or sometimes. One thing I hate is like Instagram. Like that's my main way I talk to people, I feel like. And it does a thing where it's like, it sets like your like requests. And sometimes it just hides like normal requests. Mm. And I'm like, Like I'll see a message, like I'll check it, and like it was like someone sends me a message from 2 weeks ago, and I'm like, why did I not like get notified of that? So sometimes it's just like our phones are bad too.
That's kind of, yeah, that's
Yeah.
annoying. Speaking of phones, you recently made a video on your Instagram where you were talking about how they're incredible, which
Oh yeah.
that was funny.
Thank you. Our incredible cell phones. Cause I'm like, yeah. For anyone who hasn't seen it, that's just a video of me going, we don't appreciate how incredible our cell phones are. And then I'm just like on my phone, like scrolling, like, what? Whoa, whoa. Cause I'm like, I get sucked into my phone a lot. Just on like Instagram or TikTok, and you're just like, whoa. And you waste an hour doing that.
That's so funny to me. Yeah. Have you ever found yourself, I guess, being too invested in social media? Did you have to pull yourself away from that?
Yeah. I have like the timer thing on my phone where I think I have like a half hour, I think, but I still sometimes ignore it. The screen time thing. For a while it was pretty helpful. I gotta figure out a different way, but yeah, that helped me a lot. And then deleting certain apps is very helpful too, I think.
Oh yeah. There's
Yeah.
also social media or just app limiters in general that'll kick you off an app if you go on it for 60 seconds, I think.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah, it's
That's a
really
lot.
helpful. It's helpful if you're genuinely addicted to it, you know?
Yeah. Maybe I need to get that for some. Yeah, I usually do like the 30-minute timer, and then on iPhone you can do like an extra minute or an extra like 15 minutes, or ignore it for the day. And I do the 15-minute, I do that like 20 times a day. It's a problem, but
I think to some degree it's okay, right?
yeah, I guess so.
I don't think it's bad to use it if it's not ruining your life, you know?
Yeah, true, true. And I use it to like contact people a lot too. So like some people I don't have their phone number, so I'll just message them on Instagram or whatever. So it's I'm kind of using it for work in a way. But then I, look at a bunch of memes after I send someone a message or respond to messages.
I think it's interesting too because I think if you're using social media for work, it becomes harder to not look at it for a
Yeah.
period of
Totally. Yeah, definitely.
time. How do you not let mistakes bring you down when working on a project, especially when you're working with others?
Ooh. That's a good question. I feel like that's one of the benefits of improv, where there kind of aren't really mistakes if you're doing like an improvised video or something. It's just like you tried, swing and a miss, you swung at it, it didn't really hit, or the joke didn't land, and you just like keep going. But I feel like sometimes with scripted stuff, like the one of the few things that I've like acted in where I had to like memorize a script, it eats at you. But there was like a weird silver lining with the thing I did, where I was very like kind of stiff in how I like acted, and for some reason like the director was like, I like that, like that works for what we were going for. So it's hard to say, because sometimes what you find as a mistake might be still beneficial to the project as a whole. Whether you said something wrong, or you acted weird, or something. So like, I don't know, it's hard, because it does still like eat at me, where I'm like, ah, I did so bad. But still, like the guy even told me, he's like, hey, that worked out great, like you did fine. I'm like, okay. But I feel like you just kind of have to trust it, and
It's
sort of
funny.
like put it in the past. Oh, and I actually just heard really good advice about this. I saw, I was, I filmed just as like a side gig. I filmed for people sometimes, and I filmed a play for someone. And afterwards, it was just, I was just kind of like chatting with some of the people there. And one of the people said, like, in their acting class, what they do is during a performance, you're only allowed to feel bad about your performance for twice as long as you actually performed it. So like if you perform for 10 minutes, you're only allowed to feel bad for 20 minutes. So it's like, cause it's like you feel bad for the duration of your performance and then a little extra. And then it's like, all right, it's in the past. I can't do anything else about it. Learn from my mistakes, move on. So.
Yeah. That's great advice. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's something I'll keep in mind.
From some random guy that I heard say that. I don't remember his name. And it's advice I guess I should probably follow too.
Have you ever thought about taking classes?
Yeah, I have. I haven't done it yet, but I feel like there's always stuff to learn.
Yeah.
Maybe I could learn something that I'm doing like wrong, or I could do better. I haven't done any yet, but I think maybe in the next year or so, I could see myself taking a class, like an acting class or something. But yeah.
Have you ever been in a writer's block? What do you think helped you get out of that?
Oh man, I don't know. I feel like just sort of, I feel like sometimes setting deadlines for yourself can just force you to be like, all right, I got to do something, like anything. And then that makes you do something. I say that and I haven't uploaded any videos this month, but for a while I was doing like weekly, and it's like something about having that deadline. It's like, all right, I have 2 days to shoot and edit something. I need to do something now. And then just calling over a friend and like brainstorming. So I feel like sometimes deadlines help, and then having other people can help too. Yeah. And then like there was one time I had a friend come over. It was my first time acting with him, and like he had an idea he wanted to film, and I was like, okay, cool. Like I want to film something too, but I don't have anything. And then like he just happened to say something about my lights in my kitchen. And then we filmed, it's like how police interrogations used to be, like that video on my channel. That's my friend Zach. That was like the first time like I filmed a video with him. And just him mentioning the lights, I was like, oh yeah, why don't we do a video about that? So I feel like friends can help with that too. Deadlines and friends, a combination of both.
Nice. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think about using AI as a tool for creative projects?
I saw this question in the Discord.
Shout out to who asked. I'm sorry, I forgot your username.
Yes, I forgot too. I'm sorry. It's a very touchy subject, and unfortunately, it's one of those things where it's like people view it as either all good or all bad, and there's no in between. But I think it definitely has benefits. I think it's good to help develop ideas. Like I think if you're trying to like visualize something, it's cool to be like, all right, you know, a monster destroying a city, and then you're like, all right, well, I don't like that, I wouldn't want it to look like that. Like if you're drawing something or painting something, it can be good for like a reference. It can be good for that. And then I'm not a huge fan of when it's like the end product is fully like an AI thing. I feel like it's good if there's like, I'm trying to figure out how I want to say this.
You're good.
I feel like it's beneficial when it's used on like a limited project. Like the one thing that I'm thinking about is, you know, when Joel, Alex, and I made the Good Long P movie, we used Midjourney for a lot of the backgrounds in that. And
that's a great movie, by the way.
Thank you. It's very goofy. But I think like because we made this movie and we're a team of like three guys and we kind of set a deadline. We're like, we need to get this done by the end of the year. And it's like, we could have taken the time to like draw all the backgrounds or pay thousands of dollars to get them like drawn by an artist or licensed pictures or whatever. But like, so you just don't really need to do that anymore. I think that is a benefit of AI. I think there are still obviously uses for artists, like artists and photographers, like it's still very important. And as somebody who paints, like I, it's very important. You can't see my painting, but it's like painting is very important and drawing stuff is very important. But I think on certain projects, it can be very beneficial. And yeah, like I said, like if you're on a limited team or you don't really have a budget, like I think it can be useful in respect to that. And then another thing I was thinking with in regards to that movie specifically, the Good Long P movie. So like if someone's like, all right, well, let's do it without the AI backgrounds. Then so we do it that way. But then like we used like Face App to do a lot of the faces for it, because we didn't want to use like real like people or like licensed pictures of people or just take pictures of people off Google. Like, so it's a lot of the faces are combinations of our faces and they're old or made younger. And so it's like, who's to say what AI is good and what's bad? Like, so if someone's like using Midjourney or whatever for the backgrounds is bad, how do you define like, okay, well, using Face App is fine for it or not fine for it? So I don't know.
Yeah, it's,
I thought.
Sorry.
No, I've thought about it a lot, and I don't really know if I have an answer.
But yeah,
it's a good tool for some things, and I think I don't know. But yeah, I think that's my main takeaway. I think it's a good tool for like referencing, or if you know you have like a limited like budget or timeline for something. I'm not a huge fan when it's like an end product though. Like there are some like Instagram pages that are just like posting AI pictures and it's like, and
yeah,
they have, you know, hundreds of thousands of followers. And it's like, okay, well, there's like real artists who make better stuff who have a fraction of that. Like that makes me kind of mad. It's like, I don't know, but yeah, I think that's my main, I just don't like when it's sort of the end product. Like there still needs to be some human element to it. Like using it for a background, I think is fine. But like if we made that movie and it was all AI images, it would be bad.
Is there anything else that went behind the process of Good Long P that you think might be interesting for people to know about?
For the movie?
Yeah. How it was made?
Oh yeah, I could talk about that. I think it's a very accessible way to make a movie, like an animated movie. Because all we used really for like programs was, like I said, we used Midjourney for backgrounds, but then all the animation was done in Premiere just with like keyframing. So like we'd have like a background and then we'd have like the little JPEG, like picture of like, you know, my face or Alex's face or and on the body. And then just in Premiere, you can kind of just move that around the screen, you know? So I think, as you know, as someone who has, I haven't gone to school for like art or animation or anything, I think it was an easy way to animate, and it's a fun way to learn. And then yeah, like we the whole thing was improvised in 3 hours. We like locked ourselves in a room, we had three microphones, and we're just like, we know it has to be like us meeting, and from there we didn't know. So just improvising for 3 hours. And then, yeah, I think we use Photoshop too for like, just like editing stuff and making stuff PNGs to move around. Trying to think what else. And then just a lot of sleepless nights. Just towards the end, because we wanted to get it done before like the end of the year and before like Alex came to visit, I think two or three times. And each time we're like, all right, we're going to get it finished this time. And then we just wanted to get it done by the end of the year. So that last time Alex visited, we're like, okay, we need to like stay up till 4 a.m. to finish this today. Stuff like that.
Did you chug any Arizonas?
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Nice.
Caleb movie.
That was a great movie, by the way.
Thank you.
It was really cool to see you in that too.
Yeah.
What was the process like for when you guys made the text, if you don't mind?
Yeah. So that was, we used that as Joel's March movie because it was during the Oscars. So we did rent out that Airbnb, and we just kind of like rehearsed like a day or two before, just sort of like, all right, well, this, the first scene will take place out here, and then we'll follow, and then we'll go in here, and we just sort of figured out a lot of the blocking on like the day before, and then we did like the full run throughs like the actual day of. So
Yeah, it's really cool how that movie was done in one shot. I thought it
yeah
was so unique for
yeah
and
and
yeah.
yeah and Joel's kind of like, well, this is going to be like, this is my one movie for this month, and I only have like a week to edit it for like the whole Oscars challenge. So he's like, I want to make it like special in some way. So that was, doing it in one take was his way of making it like a little more of a challenge on himself as a filmmaker. Because for editing, all you really had to do is like the audio and then color grading, and then just sort of figuring out which of the like three takes we got to use. So, and it worked out really well time wise, because we did the first take was pretty good, and then I think it was the second or third. It was when the sun started setting, so like he realized his shadow was like fully in the shot like twice, and he's like, we got to restart this one. So at the end, we got, I think, two, three and a half takes of it, I think.
Wow.
So,
It's
but yeah.
interesting because when you watch it, you can't even tell if there's a take another take at all. Have you
Yeah.
ever seen the movie? I think it's called 1987.
No.
It's I can't
Or
remember
is it
it. It's a war
night
movie that was done in one shot.
1917?
Yeah,
I think.
1917. I don't know why I
Yeah,
said
I haven't seen it though.
that.
No, you're good. But I th didn't I think I feel like they used like two or three like transition things, but like we didn't do that at all. It was just like all one shot.
Wow, yeah.
But I might be wrong on that, because I also haven't seen it. So I feel
Oh,
like that's something I heard though. Or that, is it Birdman? I feel like Birdman is one shot too, or
I've never heard of that
something.
movie. What is it about?
I haven't seen it.
Oh,
I've heard it's very good though.
maybe it's about a Birdman.
I think so.
That's probably why it's called that.
Yeah.
Do you still play ukulele?
Yeah, it's been a while, but I got it right here.
Nice. Have you thought about writing any music?
I've thought about it. I just haven't yet. But yeah, it's been a little while since I've last played, but I do still have it, and I remember how to play. I just haven't in a while.
Awesome. I would ask about music, but I feel like I shouldn't for an episode with someone who isn't a musician.
No,
You
that's
know?
okay. We could talk about music too.
Oh, I was just gonna ask, are there any musicians or artists that you like? Well, obviously there are probably,
No, I don't like any.
but
I actually don't like any. No. No, I love Cage the Elephant. That's one of my favorite bands.
nice.
Cage the Elephant. I like Death Grips too. I like a mix of everything.
Have there been any moments in your life that you think inspired you to want to make stuff as a career?
I think just sort of having the opportunity to was really the main thing, because I went to college. I have a degree in national security and a minor in history, and I realized I didn't really want to live in Washington D.C. or do government stuff, so it's kind of a useless degree for me. And then I was working like full time for a while, and I filmed with Joel a lot. And then sort of like seeing him do well, and seeing like other people I'd like heard of do well, and I was like, was like, why don't I give it a shot? You know? So I feel like that is kind of the main thing, just sort of realizing like, oh, this is like a thing that people can do now. You can make videos and like that's how you make a living, or you can like edit for people and that's how you make a living. And yeah.
Wow.
Creative stuff is awesome.
And there's so much free stuff out there too, with software and everything.
Especially. Yeah, totally.
It's so easy to just get started.
Totally. And I still use some, I use Audacity to record audio all the time, and Audacity is free. When I was first starting, I used DaVinci Resolve, which is also free. It's a good alternative to Premiere. My friend Spencer, he uses it to edit stuff all the time still. Yeah, there's so many tools right now. It's like, yeah.
There's not really a good reason not to make stuff if you want to.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And then Absinthe. I think Absinthe is free too if people want to try like animating stuff Joel style. I've never done it, but I think Absinthe's free. Joel has a tutorial. I feel like other people have made tutorials too. But yeah. There's nice. a lot of good reasons to make stuff and not a lot of reasons not to make stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any advice for people who have trouble finding confidence with their voice?
Oh. Like actual voice or like voice as an artist?
Voice as an artist.
Oh, okay. It's kind of a non-answer, but having that confidence is kind of crucial. I think you just have to accept that the stuff that you make might not be for everyone. But it will be for someone. So I'm like, I think we talked about like dry humor before, and I'm like, I feel like I've definitely posted stuff and people are like, this isn't funny. And it's like, okay, well, that style of humor is just not for everyone. And I know that, and I'm okay with that. And you just sort of have to be okay with knowing that what you're doing might not be for everyone, but it will be for someone. Like some people might be like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen, or this did nothing for me and it wasn't funny. Cause like I've definitely watched stuff where I've been like, I don't enjoy this. Why did I watch that? But I've watched other stuff where I'm like, this is the best thing I've ever seen.
Mm.
So you just sort of have to, you know, be willing to put yourself out there, and then just, you know, if someone says something bad, just kind of ignore it, like whatever. You know, if it's a legitimate criticism, you know, kind of like think on it, but like don't obsess over like negative stuff like that. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
From my understanding.
Cool.
I guess it would be something that means something to you might not mean something to someone else, and vice versa.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yeah. But it could mean something to someone else though.
Yeah.
Like it means something to you, and it might mean something to someone else, but there's another third person it might not mean anything for. And just, I don't know, don't worry about that third person.
Yeah.
Just worry about you and the person that you that enjoys it, I guess. But mostly worry about yourself, I think.
Yeah.
You should like do it for you because you like to do it. Like the football. And I'm talking, I'm just like looking like down.
You're good.
Hey, there's someone watching.
That's kind of scary. What if someone watches this in 120 years?
That'd be crazy. Hello from the past.
I hope you're doing good. I hope the world is doing okay.
Yeah, you too.
Do you have any advice for not being nervous for creative stuff?
Yeah, I think there is always going to be some underlying level of nervousness, whether it's like full nervousness or even just like one or 2% nervousness. There's like a, you know, like if I'm trying to think of an example, like yeah, like the first couple times that I acted in Joel's stuff, I was very nervous. I'm like, yeah, I wasn't super used to being on camera. I wasn't like super confident in my like acting or anything. So I was, you know, there's definitely nervousness, but then doing it a whole bunch of times, like repetition, it gets you more comfortable, and you know, I could just sit in front of a camera and talk, you know, for an hour, like, and it doesn't really make me that nervous. But that one project I did where I had to like memorize lines, and it was like a whole thing, like I was extremely nervous. And you just, it's tough, but you just sort of have to be like, well, I'm here. I have this thing that's expected of me, whether I do good or bad, I just need to do it. And just sort of forcing yourself, like, I'm doing this, I need to do this. And you can't opt out of it, especially if you're there in the moment. You can't just be like, no, I changed my mind.
Yeah.
So I feel like, you know, repetition and sort of doing stuff a whole bunch of times makes you more confident. But also, like, if you're unconfident, just sort of like, well, I have to do it. You know, I'm here. I need to do this. I have, you know, I'm, all these people are here. I have all my stuff set up already. I need to just do it, you know?
Yeah.
And I've had that before too, where sometimes for like streams and stuff, I've been like not in the best headspace. And I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I'm like, well, I have my streaming stuff all open. Like, I'm ready to go. I just have to press two buttons and then I'm live, you know? So, and then just sort of powering through that.
Are there any editing techniques that filmmakers should know, whether or not they're a beginner?
I think a good one, and one that I think was the first time I did it, I was like, oh, whoa, this is awesome, is sort of overlapping audio when you're not showing, or showing the other person when a different person's talking, if that makes sense. So like if person A is talking and then showing person B, like sort of having like an overlap before one of them starts talking. I'm so bad at describing technical stuff.
I think, like, I know what you mean. Yeah.
Like I think it's called like a J cut or an L cut, where you have like, it's like I'm talking. And then it's still on me, and then someone else starts talking off camera, and then it cuts to their, like, the footage on them. And like the first time I did a video where it's like, you, how your brain thinks of your dreams or whatever. Like, what is one of the first videos I have on my channel. Like the first time I did that, like, it's just me talking to myself. And like the first time I did that, I was like, whoa, it's like it's two different people talking, you know, it makes the space feel more lived in to have that. To like show like someone sort of like reacting, and then it shows the other person, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I think one cool editing technique I've always wondered about is when you're showing a mirror or something, how do they not have the camera be seen in the mirror?
Just angles.
Sometimes though, I feel like they have it straight on and you still can't see it. And so
I think that actually I don't really know.
It's so interesting to me how editing works as someone who doesn't know that much about it. Are there any resources that you've used to learn how to do that on YouTube?
A lot of it's just been through Joel.
Really?
but also just Googling a specific like thing, like how to do a technique. And I do that all the time. I did that today. I was like, how do I do this?
Yeah.
I was like, cause I wanted, it's like a video of someone, and I just want to have like a different background. And it's like, it's not like a green screen video. It's just like, if you took this video of like me, and I just wanted to know, like, how do I change the background? And it's like, you do like a mask, and you'd copy all the way around me, and then you can kind of change the background. It's like a whole thing. And I had to Google that, cause like, I couldn't remember how to do it. It's like, like Googling specific problems is helpful. And sometimes like videos like that, they'll show like three or four different examples, and you're like, oh, I didn't think to do it that way, you know, or sometimes, I didn't know I could use it that way.
Sometimes the hard part too is just knowing the right terminology for things.
Yeah, exactly. Like the thing I just described before, the where you have like the overlapping video and audio, I think it's called a J cut or an L cut. And I only learned that it was called that last month. And I've been doing that for like 2 years.
Wow.
And I'm And then like certain things on the camera, I'm like, I don't know the technical names, but I'm like, I know I want this to be brighter. And someone's like, you got to change your whatever setting to this. And I'm like, I don't know. So I feel like you don't really, a lot of times you don't really need the technical terminology. It's just learning how to do it. I feel like that's almost more important than knowing specific stuff like that.
Are there any quotes that you live by on a daily basis that have shaped your creative way of thinking?
Oh. There is one. I mean, I feel like I have a couple that just sort of rattle around in my head and I think of them every once in a while, but there's one that I feel like I kind of go back to a lot just because it's important, I think. And it's just make it happen. And it's something that my mom said to me once when I first moved out to LA and stuff, and I was kind of like really down on myself, and I was just like I don't know what to do. She's like, you got to make it happen. Like, you have to do it. Like, no one's going to do it for you. You have to do it. Like, make it happen. So like, and just, you know, and it doesn't really matter what that applies to. I think that can be applied to a lot of things, whether it be like artistically or just like in life, just like you have to make it happen, you know?
Yeah, that's a great quote.
Thank you. Make it happen. And I think of that. I don't really think of it. I don't really know like a direct quote for it, but I'm just like, a lot of times I'm like, I might as well do it now because it has to get done anyway. Mm-hmm. Like I used to, like when I would edit stuff, I'm like, oh, I don't want to edit that part now. I'm like, well, I need to, you know, I need to, if it's like a hard thing you have to do in an edit, it's like, well, I'm going to have to do it anyway. So I might as well just get it done now. Like that kind of logic. I think that can be helpful too.
What do you do outside of filmmaking or creative stuff?
I do a lot of creative, mostly creative stuff. I mean, like I have all my own stuff, my videos. I have like Dream Team, my podcast. I edit vlogs for someone, and then I edit like shorts and other videos for another person. Other than that though, I like to go to the gym. Like, that's fun. I like hiking.
Nice. You posted a picture today when you were hiking with your friends.
Yeah. This past weekend, last week on April 18th is my birthday, and then my friend Nick's birthday was the 19th. And we're like, oh, let's just go camping. So a couple of us went camping for the weekend, and yeah, we did bunch of hiking and stuff. Filmed a video there, which I'm going to try and get out soon before the end of the week for sure. But yeah.
Have you ever thought about going rock climbing?
Not really, no. Why?
I just thought of that question randomly.
Okay. I was going to say, is this a plug? Are you going to plug rock climbing to me?
No. Do you like Eric Andre?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Have you ever gotten inspiration from him?
Probably, yeah. And like I watched the Eric Andre show a lot when I was in college, and I saw Bad Trip a couple of years ago, that his movie he did. Yeah, I don't know if anything specifically has inspired me from him, but I'm sure in some ways it has, like subconsciously or consciously. But I think he's hilarious. I love him.
Did you know he was a bass player, and he went to Berkeley?
I've heard that. Yeah,
it's so funny to me.
Yeah.
And he's actually good too. Would you recommend college to artists?
I don't know. it's tough for me to say because I didn't go to school for an art. Because like I said, I went originally for a science, and then I switched to more of just like a history, humanitarian, criminal justice kind of field. But I feel like nowadays it's like you should only go to college if you really, really know that that's what you want to do. Like if someone's like, I want to go to school, I want to become a doctor or something, or a teacher, and it's like, you know, the only way to do that is to go to college for it, then I think yes. But I feel like in creative fields, it can definitely be beneficial for sure. like I, but I, it's hard for me to talk about it because I didn't go to school for that. But I'm like, I feel like nowadays there's just so much online, like in most fields, that I feel like you almost don't need to. It's like there's so many, like, I can't think of any right now, but there's so many famous people that are like, you know, dropped out of college and like they didn't need it. And, you know, I don't know.
And there's famous people who went to college.
Yeah, so true.
I think it really does just depend on a ton of different things all at once.
Yeah. True, true. Yeah. It definitely made me more social too. Like, I have a cool, fancy dancy piece of paper, but it did also make me very social, and it made me better at time management and stuff. So like there's a lot of positives no matter what. And like I learned a lot too. Like I learned how to like think critically and like read long papers and not be bored to tears most of the time. But I guess it really just sort of depends. And if it's, I feel like if it's something you really want to do, then totally go to college and go to school. But yeah, I think education is very important though. So like, I think school is very important.
What would you do if you had to switch your legs with your hands?
I don't know. I feel like that would just be a hassle. It'd just be so inconvenient to like have to reach up and stuff.
Yeah, that's true. What would you do if you had to have chopsticks as your hands?
Oh, that'd be cool.
I think that'd still be a hassle somewhat.
Yeah. Well, you don't really have like two fingers on each hand, pretty much.
Yeah, that's true.
I feel like you'd get used to it though. I feel pretty confident in my chopstick usage. But
yeah, it might be really annoying if you're someone who doesn't know how to use them.
Yeah, no, that would suck.
Are there any movies that you've seen recently that really excited you?
I really liked Dune 2. I saw that.
Oh, nice.
I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
I've heard a lot of things about it.
Yeah. It was very good. I kind of want to see it again. Yeah, I'm like, I never read the Dune books, or I didn't see the original. I think it's David Lynch, the one from the 70s or the 80s. So I didn't really know much about it going into it, but I was like, this is pretty cool.
Nice.
They did a really good job with the first one. I didn't really like. It was very, very like dry and very emotionless. But the second one is very like intense, and there's a lot of cool stuff that they did.
I've heard cool the music for it's really good because it's Hans Zimmer.
Yeah, it's pretty good. There's there's one part where it's because like you know like the theme. I feel like it's in a lot of memes and stuff right now. That one song. There's
yeah.
one, I guess, potential spoilers for Dune 2. I won't ruin it or anything, but there's a part where somebody gets slapped, and then right after they play that theme, and it's very funny. I think unintentionally, but it's just like, because it's like a really intense moment, and just like broken by that.
How do you balance your life with work?
Not well. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's most of my life is like work in some way or another, creatively.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it's important to have like certain like set periods of time where you're like, all right, I'm not doing any work right now. And I do that where I'm like, I'll eat lunch and like just watch YouTube videos or watch a show or something. And then like at night, or usually at night, I end up going to the gym and stuff. So I'm like, this is just my not social media time, not work time. And just like listen to music, just do whatever.
Nice.
I think having like one or two days a week where you're not really doing stuff is important. I just invented a thing called weekends. No. But yeah, I think it's important to just have like a day where you're like, all right, I'm just gonna play video games, call my friends. I try to do that. But
is there anything that you're looking for with your upcoming projects? I mean, looking forward to. Sorry.
Yeah. No, you're good. I think right now I just want to kind of get back into making more stuff. I we're recording this like late April, and I haven't really uploaded anything this month. So I'm a little bit behind schedule because I was trying to do like weekly uploads this year. So I think just trying to get back into the groove of making more stuff. But it's hard too, because like I think I mentioned earlier, I am editing for like two other people. So I'm like, I feel like I'm always making stuff, even if it's not something going on my channel. And even then, I'm always like acting in like friend stuff and everything. But I don't know. I think I'm always looking forward to just making stuff.
Can I ask about how the idea for Things Could Always Be Worse came to be?
Yeah, sure.
How did the idea for
that was the question. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry,
I said can I ask, but I always do that sometimes without realizing it.
Yeah. Sure, you can ask.
That's what I thought you were waiting for me to ask again.
Yeah. I don't know actually how we came. I think it was just sort of because the year before we did The Bad Guy, The Wolf, and The Surprise, and that was very chaotic. We just had like a whole bunch of people, and we're just like, let's just do simple this year, just a Joel and Trent movie. And so we're like, let's just get locked in a room. And like, I think Joel came up with the idea. I'm pretty sure he did. But we're just like, let's, and then from there we just sort of ran with it. We're like, I'm sure some of it'll be sad, some of it'll be like goofy and happy. And yeah,
I think it's so cool to me how you guys filmed a movie in one room.
That's something that's like fun to do too, is setting a limit for yourself, being like, all right, we have 3 hours. That's the whole idea of Joel's Oscar thing, is like, you have 3 hours to make a movie, or 3.5 hours. And we, adding limitations to that, like the one, like the text, where it's like, we have to do it all in one long take. Or Things Could Always Be Worse was like, we can't leave this room and it's just the two of us. Adding those sort of creative limitations can be fun sometimes.
Do you think limitations should be required for a project? Or not, I guess not required, but do you think that it helps with the creativity?
Yeah, I can't think of any examples right now, but just sort of like, yeah, because it forces you to like stay within a defined space and see how much you can do within that space. And a lot of times you can do a lot, even if it's a small space.
Yeah.
Space like metaphorical, not like physically.
Oh.
I mean, I guess it could be physically too, but like, I don't know, that's a term I use a lot, like play in this space, where it's like you have like a space where you're like making stuff. Like, Things Could Always Be Worse, just doing it in a room, or having a certain like time limit for something, or going to like a place in the middle of nowhere with like one object and being like, all right, we gotta make a video with this object, stuff like that. It can force creativity that you didn't know you had. It can like just pull that out of nowhere.
Can I ask about how you started your podcast with Alice, the Dream Team?
Yeah, sure. Dream Team, for those of you who don't know, it's a podcast I do with my friend Alice. We talk about dreams, like sleep dreams, and it sort of stemmed from the idea that like there's sort of like a, I'd say it's not like a taboo, because it's not like a bad, but it's just like there's just sort of like an unwillingness to talk about dreams. I feel like a lot of times people are just like, they don't want to hear people talk about dreams, or like they think it's boring or not uninteresting. And both of us really enjoy talking about dreams and hearing people's dreams. So that's kind of why we wanted to do the podcast. And there's not really, I don't think there's really any other like podcast or medium where they do that specifically, without getting too heavy on like interpretation or something, which we don't really do. But just a place to kind of talk about how weird it is that we have dreams and how weird they are, and talk about weird ones we've had, and take the fan submissions, of course. And you've given one to the show.
Yeah.
Which, thank you. But yeah, that's mostly it. And yeah.
Have you ever heard of this game called Yume Nikki?
No.
Oh, well, I just brought it up just because it's basically a game where you explore dreams, and I thought it's
Oh,
something
cool.
that might interest you.
What was it called?
It's called Yume Nikki. It's spelled YumeNikki. And that actually means
Oh,
dream
yeah.
diary in Japanese.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, maybe you can check it
Well,
out if you have a time.
yeah. I will look into this.
Awesome. Well, I think that's going to wrap it up for today's interview, unless there's anything else you want to say.
Okay. Get out there and make stuff.
Yeah. There's no reason not to nowadays, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
And yeah,
Yeah.
if you want to check out Trent's work online, you can find him on YouTube and I think Instagram. And are you on Twitter?
No, I don't have Twitter.
Okay.
Yeah.
And yeah, you can also listen to his podcast with Alice called The Dream
Yeah.
Team. That's really good. And you'll
Sounds
also
good.
probably see him in a lot of Joel's future videos. So yeah.
Yeah. My name Trent Linkarski, that's my YouTube, and then Instagram and TikTok, but I don't really use TikTok, are T Linkarski, T and then my last name. And then Dream Team, that's on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. Dream Team with Alice and Trent.
Go listen to it.
And yes, please
It's
do.
awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for
And
having me.
yeah, thanks for joining me. I had a lot of fun.
Of course.
And yeah, thanks guys for listening. I
Yeah,
love
thank you all
you.
for listening.
I love you guys.
I love you all too.
See you next time.